today on the Run to the Top podcast.
In medicine, we're taught that, you know, you only have so many resources to go around and that rest is good for you if you're injured. Now, in some respects, that's true. However, most runners, I would say, don't feel good when they don't run. Not because they're exercise addicts, it's because their physiology is different.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Sinead Hockey.
Hi everyone, Sinead here with you for this latest episode of Run to the Top, brought to you by Runners Connect. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you're new to Run to the Top, welcome to the show. I hope you enjoy today's episode and take away some useful information to you and your running. So last week, we talked with biohacker and functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, Chris Kelly, who founded a company called Nourish, Balance, Thrive. Chris helps athletes reach their peak performance and achieve better long-term health by creating personal support programs based on their unique biomarkers. He is truly revolutionizing sports medicine as we know it, so if you missed that episode, be sure to check it out. This week, we're speaking with Dr. Christopher Segler of Doc on the Run, a San Francisco-based practice that specializes in podiatry and running injuries. Much like every other runner, Chris hates the conventional protocol of taking time off when injured. And according to him, it's not only unnecessary, but it's also usually counterproductive. In today's podcast, Chris will dispel the myths surrounding running and rehab and share with us some better alternatives to getting healthy and back to the grind. So without further ado, we'll take a quick break to thank our sponsors, and then we'll be right back with our interview. I want to give a big thanks to Body Health for sponsoring Run to the Top and for giving us Perfect Amino. These 8 essential amino acids are the building blocks of protein that my body needs to train harder and recover faster. You can enter to win a pack of 6 Perfect Amino bottles for free by visiting runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. Thank you so much to Pacific Health Labs for sponsoring Run to the Top and for giving our listeners free samples of their all-natural Excel gels. Learn more on how to get your free samples at the end of this episode and check out Pacific Health Labs at runnersconnect.net/Pacific Health. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me. I'm really excited to be on the podcast. I'm a huge fan of the Run to the Top podcast as well as Runners Connect. And I really think that, this should be an interesting interview, but I'm really, really glad to be on the show and be able to participate and hopefully provide some useful information for all of your listeners.
Absolutely. Well, we are thrilled to have you on the show. So, Chris, you are a renowned foot and ankle surgeon, but you're also quite an accomplished marathoner and triathlete. In fact, you've done 14 Ironman triathlons. So first and foremost, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself as an athlete as well as your practice, Doc on the Run?
Yeah, no, I certainly. Yeah, thanks again for the introduction. I actually, not that it matters, but I've done 15 Ironman triathlons now. So So finally, after doing 14 of them, I finally got into the world championships. But so I've been running a long time. You know, I started running when I was a kid, and pretty much, you know, when I was maybe like around 10 years old, you know, every time I could get my dad to drive me to a race that was in driving distance on a Saturday or Sunday morning, I would go run a 10K. And so I've been running for over 30 years, and I really enjoy running. So I'm one of those people who, you know, I just like to run. I like to run because it's efficient exercise. I like to run because of the way it makes me feel, and I like to do races. And so I've done lots of marathons, Ironman triathlons, trail races, all kinds of stuff, but I really enjoy it. And my practice is Doc on the Run, and I have a little bit different practice than most people. I focus mostly on runners. I like to see runners and triathletes, particularly those that are not getting better. So most of what I do is actually seeing people for second opinions. And it's also different in the way that I deliver care. So I used to have a standard practice where I saw, you know, anywhere from 40 to 60 patients a day, like most doctors. But if you've been to the doctor and seen somebody like that, you know that you only get like a few minutes with the doctor and you really don't get much information. And most runners want information. That's why, you know, runners listen to this podcast, right? Because you guys have awesome guests that provide lots of really useful information and differing perspectives on running and running injuries and training techniques and everything. And so 5 to 7 minutes doesn't cut it with normal runners. And most of the people I see have already been through that. They go to see some doctor and they're told, well, stop running, or, you know, try this, you know, try to ice it and then come back in 2 weeks. And it just seems like an enormous waste of time. So I do things differently. So I do remote consultations, virtual doctor's visits, if you will, for people all over the world, you know, where we just do more or less in-person visit, but, you know, online through a web conferencing program or sometimes through phone, depending upon where they are. And I do house calls. So even when I see people at home, you know, I see runners, I look at all their shoes. We talk about their training plans. We talk about their upcoming races. We talk about how they can keep training, how they can stay fit, how they can even do their goal race and not stop racing, you know, because I don't think running is really good for most runners. And so that's really the way I've shifted my practice, is to try to make sure that I help runners achieve their goal, not just make their pain go away.
Awesome. So it seems Doc on the Run, clearly it lives up to its name. You are well-versed in injury, both from a personal standpoint and a professional standpoint. So Chris, what in your experience is the most common cause of injury, both among your clients and runners in general?
Well, for sure, you know, I think the most common thing is probably metatarsal stress fractures. So, and I say that in terms of that's, you know, the thing that I see the most. Now, the most common injury among runners is probably plantar fascia issues like plantar fasciitis, but that's true of the entire population. So, you know, plantar fasciitis accounts for almost 40% of all visits to podiatrists in the United States. And so, you know, that's the most common thing, but I don't even really think of plantar fasciitis necessarily as a running injury. And I do not think you have to stop running if you have plantar fasciitis. I think most patients can get better even if they have it. But so I kind of dismiss plantar fasciitis as a real running injury just because most Americans will get plantar fasciitis at some point during their lifetime. But most Americans are not going to get a stress fracture. So, you know, I think metatarsal stress fractures are certainly the most common thing that runners wind up getting that really jeopardizes their key race and jeopardizes their ability to run and train.
Okay, interesting. So I know you said plantar fasciitis isn't something you would maybe necessarily define as a running injury, but between that and metatarsal stress fractures, these seem to be the two injuries that runners deal with most. So what's going on here? What typically are the culprits behind these two injuries?
Well, that's a good question. So, you know, I hear this all the time where people say, well, running causes running injuries. And that's just not true. And even at some of the conferences I've lectured, I've heard another guy who is certainly an expert on biomechanics. But what he says is that 85% of all running injuries are caused by faulty biomechanics. And I don't really believe that either. And, you know, and I saw there's a video clip that I remember when I was in med school, and it's sort of an analogy to this. There was a guy that the news guy was interviewing, a highway patrolman, and he, you know, he was talking about snow and that it had just started snowing in Lake Tahoe. And then while they were standing there talking about this, there was actually an accident right behind them, like literally on camera in the background. There's a big crash where some people slid into each other in the snow. And the interviewer said to the highway patrolman, he said, well, isn't it true that snow causes accidents? And the highway patrolman looked at him like he was an idiot. And he said, no, driving too fast for conditions causes accidents. And it's totally true. And so, you know, I don't believe that running causes running injuries. I believe training errors cause running injuries. I believe that not communicating with your coach causes running injuries. I think there are some underlying things and lifestyle habits that can make you more susceptible to injury, but I don't think running is the problem. So the simplest thing is mechanical stressors. And, you know, we think of this in terms of biomechanical stress of, you know, running too much, too fast, too soon, too far, whatever. You can have oxidative stressors, not enough antioxidants in your diet. You can have environmental stressors, being exposed to car exhaust, running in poor air quality, all that sort of thing. You can have hormonal stressors. You can have, you know, pituitary gland dysfunction or thyroid dysfunction. Certainly, those things can also affect your vitamin D levels. You can have psychological stressors too. And it's been interesting to me how many runners I've seen who are in their 40s or 50s who've been basically doing what they think of as not even competitive running anymore. They're doing basically the same routine of standard runs several times a week for fitness and maintaining their fitness, you know, in between races. And then they get like Achilles tendonitis or stress fracture or something. And then I start asking them all these questions about their goals and so on. And, you know, what's changed? Trying to figure out why after decades of running, did you suddenly get this overtraining injury when you're not even like really overtraining? And what usually pans out is they'll say something like, well, I have this new job responsibility and I've barely been sleeping, or, well, we had a baby. Or one woman, I remember, like, she started crying and she said, my husband just left me and filed for divorce. And all those things are very, very stressful. So it's just math. It's like you, I believe you have so much stress that your body can take. And if it's too much, then something breaks. And Mark Allen actually said this one time, you know, at the workshop thing I was doing with him. And Mark Allen said, well, it's really simple. You know, if you do too much, either you get an overtraining injury or you get sick. Like, I got pneumonia right before the Ironman World Championships. Well, young, healthy people don't normally get pneumonia. But, you know, I just happened to get pneumonia instead of plantar fasciitis or a stress fracture or Achilles tendonitis or whatever. But all of these stressors add up. So I think you have to do whatever you can to control the stressors to make sure that you don't wind up with too much cumulative stress that actually leads to the overtraining injury.
Okay, very interesting. So I know our listeners can definitely relate to what you just said. Obviously, there are so many different types of stresses within any given day, whether they be good or bad, and these all seem to add up to your stress threshold. So do you have any advice on how to, it sounds kind of like it's an art form, not exceeding that stress threshold. How would you advise people go about maybe coming to the line, but not crossing it?
That is a good question. So I would say that it is kind of an art form. And if you talk to professional athletes, professional runners, professional triathletes, they are always messing around with this. So very few of them are doing the same thing today that they were doing a year ago or 5 years ago. So they're always trying to figure out what it is that's stressful and what they can manage. And they're always trying to adjust the math. So the thing is that I believe that it is, I mean, I like to do everything myself, but in some cases it is really useful to have help from people that know more than I do. And this is where having a coach comes in. So, you know, I think it's really important to use a coach. And if you have a coach locally who you can see and communicate with, that's fine. But the truth is that now geography has nothing to do with it. You know, you can get a dedicated coach, or you can get assistance through a coach, through a program like Runners Connect, to help you identify and manage these things. So, you know, I'm a runner. I'm a doctor that treats running injuries. And all I do is think about this stuff. And coaches have been thinking about this stuff for far longer than I have, and have far more experience, truthfully, in managing these levels of varying levels of stressors, because they're always talking to their athletes about all of these specific issues, about how to adjust, you know, work, travel schedules, childcare issues, all of these things around their workouts. And they understand that these things are stressful. So, you know, I think the biggest thing is to work with a coach to try to get further ahead. You know, without that assistance, you can figure it out, but it could take you years longer than if you're actually working with a coach.
Absolutely. Being able to communicate with a coach and alter training according to your needs can be a real godsend when it comes to not exceeding that stress threshold. So, Chris, you also said that injuries are often a product of biomechanical flaws. So this is pretty interesting. We actually had barefoot running and minimalist shoe expert Dr. Irene Davis on the show a few weeks ago, and she went into great detail on these biomechanical flaws. So are you familiar with Irene Davis, Chris?
Oh, yeah. No, totally. So I am not only familiar with her, I'm a huge fan. I mean, she is, I think she's doing some of the most important research to help runners. And, you know, the stuff that all the research that she's been doing on running injuries as related to running form, forefoot versus rear foot striking and impact forces, I think is incredibly useful. And I reference her work every time I lecture at medical conferences on running biomechanics and running injuries. I mean, I talk about her work all the time. So, yeah, so I completely understand what she's doing, and I am a huge fan of her work. I really am.
That's great. I really enjoyed interviewing Irene, learned a lot during that interview. For our listeners that maybe didn't catch that one, Dr. Irene Davis argues that injuries are often a product of mechanical flaws that are often a product of the motion control and cushiony shoes on our feet. So, Chris, what's your opinion on this? Do you think injuries really are often caused by our footwear?
I do. I absolutely do. So the thing is, a couple of things that are interesting about that, you know, as opposed to, I'm not going to obviously going to try to reframe Dr. Davis's work here in any way. But if you think about this from a different perspective, how many kids get running injuries? None, basically, right? Like, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So kids don't get running injuries. Now, there was I don't remember the numbers, but there was a study that looked at kids and running form, and kids know how to run, and kids don't get running injuries. Kids don't have coaches. Kids don't read books on running injuries, and kids don't read books on running form. Kids don't take courses on how to adjust the running form, and they don't get injured. So when you look at kids, there was this interesting study that actually looked at their running form, and I don't remember what it was, but I think it was something like 85% or 73% or something. But it was the overwhelming majority of children actually run as a forefoot or midfoot striker. 85% of adults run as rearfoot strikers. 85% of adults who run as rearfoot strikers, they've also all been wearing some sort of shoe that has an elevated heel, usually somewhere roughly in the vicinity of 12 millimeters for more or less their entire lives. So why is that? So why is it that, you know, as adults, we sort of all get converted from being these sort of natural born runners to people who develop running injuries? So my theory is that it is because of the shoes themselves, that this elevated heel adjusts your foot strike and your biomechanics in a way that's maladaptive. And I think that's really what happens. And so, you know, that is a fairly new thing, but there is an enormous number of people that get injured every year from running, if you call it an injury from running. I think it's usually training errors, but, you know, how many of those people would not get injured if they didn't have these elevated cushy shoes? And I think it's definitely related. I think that the shoes and the motion control sort of approach, cushioning approach that we're taught is supposed to help us in the end becomes a limiter. And I think it predisposes us to injury.
Definitely. One of Irene's quotes that actually stuck out to me from that interview was she said, running is in our evolution. It's something that should be so natural to us, but we get injured at such a high rate while animals like birds, you don't see them getting wing injuries all the time and you don't see fish getting fin injuries all the time. So why are we getting injured at such a high rate? So it really does make you wonder about these shoes on our feet. So Chris, would you say you're a minimalist shoe advocate as well?
Well, yes, in a way I am. So I will tell you that I actually run in four different types of shoes depending upon what workout I'm doing. And I am a minimalist advocate. There are some people that I don't think should run with minimalist shoes. And I think that most people who get injured when they say, oh, I tried that and I got injured, well, they did it wrong is what I really and truly believe. And I think that there is a way that you have to go about it. I don't think that you can take a high level, super fit athlete and take them and just switch them to minimalist shoes and have them start going out and doing 15 or 20 mile runs and not expect to get injured. So you have to adjust that gradually. But many years ago, I was asked to write a review for Newton running shoes, and I was using the Newton Gravity trainers, and I honestly was very skeptical about this. This is sort of a personal aside, but I didn't really think that it made sense. So, you know, reading the whole thing that they're promoting at that time about this, you know, Newton's law of action and reaction, and that you store this energy in these elastomeric lugs and it propels you forward, I actually had this image in my mind when I would read that about Wile E. Coyote bounding down the highway after the Roadrunner with springs on his feet, you know? And I was like, okay, this sounds ludicrous, but whatever, I'll try it. However, I figured if I was going to review their shoes and I was going to do it in a way that was fair, then I needed to do whatever they said I should do. And it came with an instruction card that said basically like the first time you're supposed to run 1 mile. I remember putting on my hat and my sunglasses and my heart rate monitor, and I was thinking, man, it took me longer to get dressed than it's going to take to run a mile. But I did. So I ran a mile, and then I started using Newton's only once a week when I did mile repeats on the track. And I did that for a few months, and then I ran a marathon. And I took 20 minutes off my PR.
My gosh, wow.
20 minutes is a big chunk of time. And I remember when I wrote something on a blog about this, some guy commented, and he said, oh, well, I've had hats where I ran a PR. And I'll tell you right now, if somebody told me they bought a new hat and got 20 minutes off their time, I'd buy two of them. So I don't think it's that sort of issue. 20 minutes is a huge chunk of time. And The interesting thing to me is that when I was a kid, I was plagued with shin splints. I ran in hilly areas. My dad took me to get the Nike Air Pegasus running shoes when they first came out because that was supposed to be more cushioning. And I was told that that would make the shin splints go away. It didn't. Then sorbitane inserts came out, which were supposed to absorb shock and stress. And my dad drove me to Atlanta because he found a place that had them. Made no difference. For decades, literally, when I would do lots of hill repeats or hill work, I would get shin splints. Since I did this thing where I started doing this shifting to forefoot and midfoot striking by doing mile repeats on the track wearing Newtons once a week, I have had zero episodes of shin splints, and it's been years now. So for me personally, it's very difficult to believe that shifting my stride in that way was not helpful. I'm definitely a faster runner. I now, when I do Ironmans, I typically run the Ironman distance marathon, you know, off the bike faster than I used to run freestanding marathons. So, and that's with a 112-mile warm up on the bike. Oh my so gosh. I think it's made a huge difference for me. I think it can reduce your risk of injury. I think it's more efficient. I really do believe that. And I have, you know, personal anecdotes that support that. But I think that it's really important to analyze your pattern of injury and your associated gait patterns. And, you know, if you do a, like, I think Runners Connect has a run form analysis program exactly. So if you, you know, obviously if you have somebody locally who can just see you and analyze your run form, and it's somebody that obviously does this for a living and does it all the time, that's great. But the same way that I see people all over the world and help them get over their running injuries, you know, via web conferencing programs, you can just as easily do a run form analysis with Runners Connect and get benefit. So, you know, I have runners ask me, can you come see me and do a run analysis? Well, I can do that, but I actually believe that doing a consultation and, you know, basically engagement with Runners Connect to have you guys assess the running form is better because you do that all the time. That's what you think about. Right. Yeah. So I think it's better, you know, and so many times we get this, I guess, foolish perception that just because somebody's in person and you can see them in person, that it's better. It's not necessarily true. You want people that have the most experience doing that one thing. And so doing a run analysis, you know, either through a course type thing or a remote thing where you send video of yourself running and all that and then talk about it, I think it's more beneficial because you get more direct experience with experts who can really assess what's going on with you and help move you in the right direction faster.
Absolutely. And we will definitely link our running form course below. It's a pretty popular course, like Chris just said. So, Chris, getting back to these motion control shoes and these cushion shoes, like you just said, there is a period of adaptation required when a runner transitions into these cushiony shoes, just like there is a period of adaptation required when a runner maybe chooses to try barefoot running. So, sometimes that period of adaptation is all it takes, but from what you said, it seems to me that some runners are just better suited for one or the other. So in your experience, when is it better for a runner to avoid minimalist shoe wear and maybe just stick to the standard cushioned shoes?
Well, basically what I think of is, you know, there are certain patterns of injury that happen with certain foot types. Like, you know, people that have what we call neutral runners, right? People with a stable, high arch, seem to develop certain injuries like metatarsal stress fractures, tibial stress fractures, peroneal tendonitis, and shin splints. And so if you don't even know what your foot type is, but you're getting those injuries, then the chances are really good in my mind that you could use a minimalist type approach and decrease your risk of injury. That's what I believe. People who have flat feet, who have unstable feet, who, you know, they overpronate, they develop different injuries. They don't really get those same injuries. They usually get things like posterior tibial tendonitis. They get other injuries that are related to their foot type and the way that they run. Now, for that doesn't mean that people that have flat feet can't use a minimalist approach to their advantage. I think they can, but I certainly wouldn't recommend to somebody who has active posterior tibial tendonitis that they should try switching to minimalist shoes because, you know, you have to get used to this sort of increase in instability that naturally happens with that, but it does change very quickly. But overall, the stresses are lower, but you know, you just don't want to do it when you have an active injury, because if you're compensating and you're trying to adjust stress away from some injured structure, and then you try a different approach, you may just aggravate that injury or cause a different secondary injury altogether.
Very interesting. So clearly there are a lot of things that contribute to injury, and so much so that up to 79% of runners are injured each year. But there is a silver lining to being injured as a runner. Chris, I've actually seen where you have said runners have an unfair advantage when it comes to recovering. So what do you mean by that? How do runners recover quicker than non-runners?
That's a good question. So this is one of the things I talk about a lot when I lecture to physicians. And, you know, I have, in fact, this one slide of this talk on running injuries I have, the very first slide is a picture of a metatarsal stress fracture. And it's obviously a stress fracture. And I usually ask the audience, you know, well, what is that? And some doctor raises their hand and says, oh, it's a stress fracture. I say, okay, great. What's the treatment? And they say, fracture walking boot for 6 weeks. Okay, great. And then the next slide is a different foot with a different stress fracture. And I say, what is that? And some other doctor says, it's a stress fracture, you know, just a different foot. So, okay, great. What's the treatment? 6 weeks. I say, is there anybody here that disagrees? And not a single hand. I said, okay, so just to be clear, we have two stress fractures. Everybody in this room, every doctor believes that the treatment is 6 weeks in a fracture walking boot. And then the very next slide is a picture of the two runners. One of them is a 32-year-old female ultramarathoner that got a stress fracture doing a 100-mile trail race. The other is a 74-year-old diabetic guy who has peripheral vascular disease, renal failure, uncontrolled diabetes, every bad thing on the planet. And I'm like, okay, is there anybody in the room who believes it's really going to take her 6 weeks to heal? Is there anyone in the room who believes that even if we put this guy in the hospital in the ICU, that he could possibly heal in 6 weeks? Like, there's no chance. So why is it that like 10 seconds ago, every doctor in this room says 6 weeks is the right answer for both of them? I say, it's the wrong answer for both of them. So you have these gross discrepancies between the overall health status of people. Like, the average American is not the same as the average runner, in my mind. You know, the levels of fitness, the levels of overall health are very different. And in most cases, the diet is very different. You have those things as a base difference. But then what you also have is that when somebody has been running and they've been athletic for most of their life, you have had this perpetual, habitual process of tissue damage and tissue repair. So I don't have any proof of this, but what I actually believe is that the same way that we know you can reinforce certain neural circuits, certain brain pathways, and develop healthy habits or unhealthy habits, you condition your brain to strengthen those connections, you can do the same thing with your body. And so I believe that most runners who have been habitually active, that cycle of tissue damage and tissue repair effectively trains your immune system and your body to heal injuries faster. Because let's face it, when you go out and you do speed work, you do mile repeats, you do hill repeats, you do any kind of strength training or even long runs, you're doing tissue damage. You get sore because you have tissue damage. And the process of building that tissue damage is what makes you stronger. And you're doing that multiple times a week. And your body is learning how to mobilize resources to repair that tissue faster. So your system, your immune system, your physiology is basically optimized to mobilize all the resources to get one of these things to heal. And that the thing to heal is either the tissue damage that happens in your daily and normal training process, or it's something that happens because of an overtraining injury, an unfortunate incident where you actually get a real injury. It's just a much more dramatic situation than your normal day-to-day training injuries, if you call it that, when you get these minor little tissue damage things in the muscle that have to repair to make you stronger. So, you know, I believe that you are primed to heal when you're a runner. And not only do you have the lack of major medical problems that lots of Americans have, you also have better sleep patterns. You think about sleep as a resource. You think about nutrition as a resource. You use those things to your advantage to speed up healing of your day-to-day process of healing, the training injuries per se, and then you get injured and your body is ready to heal. So that's what I mean by that, is that I actually believe runners heal faster. So when doctors say, oh, well, it's 6 weeks for this injury, no running, no this, no that, well, that's craziness. And is it really the same for the person that weighs 500 pounds sitting next to that runner in the waiting room? It's ludicrous, completely ludicrous. So, you know, I believe runners can recover faster. And I believe the doctors have to take that into account because we are individuals. And, you know, everybody is different and everybody's going to heal differently depending upon who they are, how fit they are, and what they do.
Okay, interesting. It's kind of cool that we runners have essentially trained our bodies to recover quicker just through the physiological adaptations we gain through training. And it can be really frustrating, like you said, when you go into a doctor's office and they tell you to take 6 weeks off, no matter who you are, no matter what your injury might be. 6 weeks off to a runner kind of just sounds like a death sentence. And Chris, according to you, this is usually very counterproductive. So can you tell us why that is? Why is inactivity pretty much the last thing a runner wants when trying to recover from injury?
Yeah, that's a good question. And there are a number of things that, you know, this is a sort of multifactorial thing. And time off, I think, is terrible for many reasons. The first thing is that we have this idea in medicine that we're taught that, you know, you only have so many resources to go around and you can only heal so much stuff at one time, and that rest is good for you if you're injured. Now, in some respects, that's true. However, runners, most runners, I would say, don't feel good when they don't run. And it's not because they're exercise addicts. It's because their physiology is different. And there are lots of studies that show that if you take somebody who is an endurance runner or long-term athlete and you stop all of their activity, they're more prone to depression, their cortisol levels go up, all the stress hormone levels go up. And those things we know counteract healing. So those stress hormones can decrease your body's process of protein synthesis. It messes up your insulin levels. All of this stuff with your physiology gets out of whack when you have all these stress hormones present. There's a reason that 50 or 60 years ago, if you were really stressed out with your job and you're having a heart attack, then the doctor would write you a prescription to go to Florida for vacation. You know, they want you to remove the stress because the stress is what's causing the problem. And just as we talked about earlier about how all these stresses add up to cause injuries, when you take a runner and you tell them to stop running, the stress hormones go way up. And so, you know, again, it's like, I need to run. I need to run regularly. I need to exercise regularly. And if I don't, you know, for a day or two, it's no big deal. But 3 or 4 days, my friends don't want to hang out with me. And I get very grumpy. I get impatient. And it's all because of stress hormones. And so, you know, I think that you have to, just in terms of your healing capacity, you have to take that into consideration. The other thing that most doctors don't talk about is that there are a number of what I think of as real serious problems that happen to runners specifically as a result of not running that really causes problems down the line. And I think it sets up a whole chain of recurring injuries when you stop running. So the first thing is that when you take 6 weeks off of fitness, I guarantee you there's not one person listening to this podcast episode who does not fear that they would lose most of their aerobic fitness if you stop for 6 weeks. So you start off, you lose your aerobic fitness. Your aerobic fitness is what helps you maintain good running form, obviously. You also lose strength. So we know if you're in a fracture walking boot with crutches for 1 week, you lose 17% of the strength in that leg in 1 week.
Wow.
And you can lose up to 60% in 6 weeks. So if, I mean, I have a friend who, he used to do Ironman triathlons. I won't bore you with the whole story, but basically he was off of his foot for months because he had a blood clot in his leg. To this day, that was decades ago. And to this day, even though he's still super fit and he does, you know, century bike rides all the time and all that kind of stuff, his calf muscle on one side is half the size of that on his other side, and it's never going to come back. And in 6 weeks, you also lose bone density. So if you lose bone density because of inactivity, the bones are going to be weaker. If you're a woman, it's very, very difficult to ever get that back. And even if you're male and you can build bone density easier, they're still weaker. So if you stop activity and you get decreased bone density, the bones themselves are more likely to break when you start running. You also lose tendon and ligament flexibility. So if you stop running and you immobilize something in a fracture walking boot, the tendons and ligaments that are supposed to dynamically absorb force are then less able to dynamically absorb force. They're more prone to tearing. It makes the forces higher throughout your foot and ankle when you run. And then you also have neuromuscular connections that get lost. So, you know, the whole point of speed work is to make sure that you can get all of these muscle bundles to fire and be synchronous, right? That's what makes you more effective and more efficient. You know, all the muscles are firing at the same time. And all those neuromuscular connections that you develop through training start to dissipate and go away when you take time off. And so when you take somebody who has been, you know, sentenced to 6 weeks of no exercise, they have no aerobic fitness, they have weak muscles, they have stiff tendons and ligaments, they have weak bones, fragile bones, they have no coordination of form that makes them more efficient and at lower risk of injury by spreading out the forces. And so their running form's terrible. So then you take this person who's basically been incapacitated and weakened by this period of recovery that was prescribed by a doctor, and then they go run and they're more likely to have another problem, you know, and that happens all the time. I had a woman that as a patient who was, she had a sesamoid issue, but she ended up, she had to use a fracture walking boot for 3 months partially because she wasn't behaving. But then she actually decided, you know, she was going to get out of the boot. I made custom orthotics for her to spread out the forces because I knew she was at an enormous risk of this type of re-injury that we're talking about. I told her, you know, you have to get used to walking in the orthotics and also and so forth. She called me the next day crying. And I said, what happened? And she said, well, I know you told me I had to go easy on this, but you know, it was finally like I was out of the boot and it was a beautiful day. And I went to the marina and I just ran 3 miles and I ran slow, but my foot's black and blue and it's killing me now. Sent her for an x-ray and she had broken her third metatarsal. Oh, no. Not a stress fracture, like completely broke it. So then she was in the boot for another 6 weeks. And that is a perfect example of why this is such a terrible idea. The doctors look at it and they say, oh, well, if you want this one thing, this one injured thing to get better, you need to pay for it by this whole protocol that we use in America as the standard treatment. And they don't even mention that you're going to have this enormous risk of recurring injuries that may or may not ever go away. So it makes me very nervous when somebody is just told as a standard thing, oh, we'll use the boot for 6 weeks. And then I got an email today. Same thing. Patient said she, you know, was told she had one problem. She went in, she wore a fracture walking boot for 6 weeks, went back in. The doctor said, well, you're not better. Let's just do another 6 weeks in the boot.
Oh, man. God, it's so frustrating how little conventional healthcare really caters towards runners, isn't it?
It's true. It doesn't. So, you know, and I mean, it's incredible like that's our system, but it is our system. So, you know, I think our system works okay for most people with most problems, but when it comes to running injuries, when you're talking about getting somebody to run, again, so many doctors view running as the problem, not the goal. They view it as the problem. And so it doesn't make sense, you know, and you can't expect a doctor to basically help you get back to running when they don't believe that it's a good idea for you in the first place, you know, which so when a doctor says, oh, yeah, you just have to quit running. I mean, in my mind, that doctor's fired. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Oh, man, it's so frustrating. You've basically said that inactivity is actually the worst thing. It's kind of the kiss of death to runners when they're injured, and it's usually what is prescribed to them when they're injured. So, Chris, can we just break this down? What should runners actually do to facilitate recovery depending on the injury? And, Chris, I've sent you a pretty lengthy list of the more common running injuries, but I've included Achilles tendonitis, plantar fasciitis, ITBS, shin splints, and runner's knee, just to name a few.
Yeah, that's a great question. So whenever I lecture to physicians at medical conferences about running injuries, this is a question that actually always comes up. And at those conferences, you know, I'm always trying to teach the physicians how to help runners continue to run and train and maintain their fitness, even when they're recovering from an overtraining injury. So invariably, some doctor in the audience will ask me which conditions really warrant consideration of stopping running for some period of time just to allow that particular injury to recover. So really, there are only three that I really think of when I go, yeah, you probably ought to really consider this carefully. The first is a sesamoid injury. So the little bones under the big toe joint, there are two of them. They're kind of like your kneecap, but they're under the big toe joint and they're the size of kidney beans. And when you are running and your, let's say your right foot is on the ground, your other foot's in your leg, so 100% of your weight is on your foot. 50% of the force goes through the big toe joint. That means that 25% of your weight is going through each of these two little bones that are each the size of kidney beans. So that's a lot of force for a very little thing. If they get aggravated and injured, they can be really uncomfortable and they can be difficult to calm down. if they turn into a true stress fracture in a sesamoid, it's really risky because it's not easy to treat them. And if it breaks and the stress fracture, you know, continues to get worse and you ignore it and it breaks into two pieces or three pieces or more, then the treatment is basically to have you stop your activity. And then if it hurts, we take it out surgically. This is not complicated. You then take out one of them. The toe is going to deviate one direction or another because it's now imbalanced. And so that makes your forces abnormal, putting you at risk of other injuries. And then you now have all of the weight going through one sesamoid that was divided up between two. So you just double the force on the other one. So that makes me very, very nervous. So, those things are really concerning, like sesamoiditis. Posterior tibial tendonitis is the same way. If it's really flared up and you run, you're really running the risk of having that thing stretch out or rupture. And if you have real Achilles tendonitis where the tendon's really swollen and really sore, then that's extremely worrisome. So the Achilles tendon can turn into a big problem that's very difficult to fix. So, you know, those three are the most concerning overtraining injuries that I see in my practice. You know, plantar fasciitis, metatarsal stress fractures, peroneal tendonitis, various muscle strains, and most other injuries are really minor by comparison. So, you know, I think you have to be concerned about these three particular things. But having said that, it doesn't mean you really have to stop running with the entire range of any of these injuries, because there are ranges of trouble and ranges of potential tissue damage that have to be taken into consideration. You know, it's crucial for you to figure out, you know, where you are on this continuum and then determine what sort of activity level would be permissible and still allow healing of that injury. Because, you know, if you just have like really some mild sesamoiditis and sesamoid's a little aggravated, I actually got this earlier this week. And I don't know what I did. Stepped on one of my kids' Legos or something, maybe. Who knows? But, you know, I understand it. And I know I don't have a stress fracture, so I could run with it. You know, I used shoes that have a stiffer forefoot. And because I had what I knew was a sesamoid issue, I actually ran in Hokas. So, you know, the Hokas have an active foot frame and a stiff forefoot rocker, so it decreases a lot of the load through the sesamoids. I ran in those. 2 days later, it's not even bothering me. I still ran on it, and it improved. So, you know, there are always exceptions to these things. And sometimes it may be dramatic. I mean, you know, I think if you talk to a doctor, if you have any issue with the sesamoids, they'll tell you not to run. I actually think that when it's a thing that's going to turn into a worse problem, like a true sesamoid fracture, when you already have what's obviously a true sesamoid stress fracture, then you probably shouldn't run on it. But even with that, there are exceptions. I mean, for example, I once saw this young woman, and she had sesamoiditis or thought she had sesamoiditis. But when I saw her, she actually had a pretty severe sesamoid stress fracture. And she was telling me that she was training for a marathon that was only 3 weeks away. And I just said, look, no way. This is really, really risky. And I don't normally tell people this, but you cannot run that marathon. And she burst into tears. Oh. And I was like, okay, well, what's the big deal? I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking, what's the big deal? You know, there's a marathon every weekend somewhere in the country. And, you know, I'm just thinking you can let this calm down and go to another one. So I basically tried to give her my pitch on why she should do a different marathon. And she started to explain. And she said, you don't understand. I basically was, you know, I started running and then I went to get a massage. And during this massage, my massage therapist found this weird lump and I had a sarcoma. I was told that I was going to die. They did surgery. They took out like this entire muscle. And I have this deformity now because they took out this entire muscle and they told me I was going to die. But I had chemotherapy, I had surgery, I had radiation, I had everything. And I'm in remission now. And I decided that I was going to do a marathon to prove that I beat cancer.
Oh, wow.
And she said, in 3 weeks, I'm going to run this marathon and everybody in my family's going to be there. All my friends have booked flights and hotel rooms. And I need to do it. And I said, you know what? You should go run. And I said, but how important is running to you? And she said, truthfully, I hate running. I just did it to prove that I beat cancer. And she said, I don't even really like running, but I really want to go do this. And I was just like, well, if that's true, then you should definitely run. And if it breaks, we'll take it out. You know, but in that case, I think that made a lot of sense because this obviously was extremely important to her for a really worthwhile reason. Now, if that's somebody that said, okay, well, I'm doing this race just because I want to run with my buddies, but I've qualified for Boston and I really want to go fast in Boston, I'd say, wow, that's a really stupid thing to do. you know, but they're completely different circumstances. So there are always exceptions. And, you know, granted, she went and ran this thing and she achieved her goal and, you know, it was amazing and she didn't get worse. So that was lucky. But I was very clear to explain to her that, you know, this could get really bad. You might have to have surgery later, but with all you've been through, that sounds like a minor thing, you know, but there are always exceptions. So your doctor has to understand like what's really important. And it's different for everybody. You know, we're all different people.
Definitely. Obviously, in that case, the path you took with her was justified because that race was extremely important to her and more important than the prospect of racing after that race. So it does definitely depend on a person's priorities, how they should go about dealing with injuries sometimes. And some injuries obviously are more severe than others. So another question I wanted to ask you, Chris, was, how should an injured runner know when it's time to replace some of their running with different types of exercise, different methods of cross training, for instance, that put less impact on the body and help facilitate recovery in that way?
That's a good question. So, yeah, one of the things, you know, like we talked about already, of course, is that, you know, doctors will often recommend rest, and they also are dismissive of lots of runners' desire to continue exercising or running, and they all and now there's like this trend even to like call it an addiction, you know, and it's not. It's a healthy lifestyle choice. So the thing is that if you get injured and you need to figure out what you should do, well, I don't think rest is the thing for all the reasons we talked about. But also, if you think about it in terms of, you know, a really severe injury where you really do have to use a fracture walking boot or a cast or crutches or whatever, then you have a couple of choices. One of them is to let everything atrophy, to let all your neuromuscular connections go away, to lose all your aerobic fitness, all of that. That is one choice you can make, and that's the current recommendation for most doctors, it seems. But you don't have to do this. And so when I talk to patients about this, I'm like, look, okay, you're not going to use everything below your right knee. Okay, that's terrible. However, you can still keep everything else, the other 80% of your body, completely, totally healthy and fit. You know, you can do that. And if you do that, then when you get back to running and training, your form's not going to be as terrible. You're not going to be weak. You're not going to be completely out of breath when you go for your first run. You know, so you can keep the rest of the system better. The reason that runners do core work and gym workouts is what? It's not because they want to go to the gym and lift weights. It's because having that global fitness, that increased strength in these little supporting muscle groups that help you maintain better running form makes you run faster and more efficiently. And it's the same thing with this kind of injury. So if you're cross training because you have an injury that makes it necessary for you to stop using one part of your body as much, you should do that. And the way to do that is to work with a coach. So, you know, again, if you have a coach who you can email or talk to or get advice from, no matter where they are, then you can maintain your fitness in a way that's going to mitigate the trouble from taking time off of running. I mean, I personally, like, I'll tell you that with cycling, I had one time when I was doing a marathon every month. And then as an experiment, I took an entire month off with zero running, none, from one marathon to another. I rode a bike about 300 miles a week. So I did still exercise. I rode a lot, and my marathon time was 1 minute difference.
Wow.
So you can maintain a lot of fitness, you know, if you're doing other things, and to not do other things that you can do without putting the risk of healing in jeopardy seems to make a lot of sense to me. The best way to do that is to really communicate what's going on and then figure out with your coach, you know, somebody that's had experience in getting people to maintain their fitness during periods of injury. That's the best way to do it.
Gotcha. And there are so many different types of cross-training methods. Chris, you mentioned cycling, but there's also aqua jogging and getting on the elliptical and swimming. There are so many different options. And some cross-training methods are better for some injuries than others. So, Chris, do you have any advice on how runners should go about determining the cross-training method that might suit their particular injury best?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we always talk about this with injured runners. You know, if somebody has like turf toe, it's not a very serious injury, but it's irritation of the joint capsule around the big toe. And it's not a big thing, you know, I mean, but so we say, okay, well, sure, you can swim. Like I would let people swim with fractures, you know, why not? But with turf toe, if you're kicking, you're moving the joint capsule every time. So even though you're not stressing it in the way that we think of conventionally, that's a terrible thing to do. If you don't have it taped and you don't have a fracture walking boot on and you get in and you're aqua jogging, it's a terrible thing to do for that injury. But most other injuries, you could do those things and get away with it with no problem at all. It just depends on what structure it is. And so that's the thing, is you have to think about it in terms of the specific runner and what the goal is, but also in terms of what the specific injury is.
Absolutely. So, Chris, one last question I wanted to ask you today has to do with RICE, which most runners are familiar with. If you're not, it stands for recovery, ice, compression, and elevation. And these are the four most common methods to reducing inflammation and helping facilitate recovery. But inflammation actually plays a pretty vital role to the recovery process. So, Chris, the question I had for you was, does taking anti-inflammatories actually inhibit recovery, or is this not really something you need to worry about?
That's a great question. So, yes. So, basically, there are three phases of wound healing. And the first phase is the inflammatory phase. That's where you get, pain, swelling, redness, where the blood vessels are dilating. Your body's trying to clean up whatever tissue damage it is and start the repair process. That usually goes on for about a week or 10 days or something. But it is the first phase of wound healing. Now, the second phase is the proliferative phase, where everything gets stronger, where you get new collagen fibers laying down, you get rebuilding of tissue. And that's what, of course, sounds appealing to runners, right? Like, you want to get stronger and you want things to be better and you want things to be prepared. And then after that's the remodeling phase, where the tissue actually gets sort of reorganized to make it much better, stronger, and more resistant to re-injury. And that can go on for a year and a half. So obviously, you're not going to wait for that to finish before you start doing anything. So the thing is that when everybody hears, like, okay, well, the important part that we think of, the proliferative phase, where you're getting this actual rebuilding of tissue, since it doesn't start until the inflammatory phase is over, you want to do something to shut that off. And so, icing can help with that. Anti-inflammatories, it seems, would help with that. And it used to be really accepted that we would basically just give you lots of anti-inflammatories. So when I was in medical school, that was still in favor. So after surgery, we'd cut you open, fix whatever we're fixing, quote unquote, and then sew you back up. And I would give you a prescription for pain medicine. And I would say, okay, here's your narcotic pain medicine. Take it today and tomorrow and the next day. And then after 2 days, you can take some anti-inflammatories and start getting off of the real powerful pain medicine, because this is going to make you tired and stupid, basically. So that is really not a good idea now. So now I don't ever do that. So, the problem is there have been lots of studies that actually show that non-steroidal anti-inflammatories can actually slow healing of these kinds of injuries. So they clearly slow healing of the, what we call the tendon to bone interface, that area where the tendons, ligaments, and bones actually connect together. And so if you have all of these kinds of injuries, whether it's plantar fasciitis or a case of Achilles tendonitis or even turf toe or a plantar plate injury, technically those all involve injuries to structures made of collagen that are trying to attach to bone. And if you take anti-inflammatories, it can actually slow down and impede the recovery process. So, I don't do that anymore. I don't think it's a good idea to recommend that to runners, and it can slow down your recovery process. So interestingly, I would say probably about half of the runners I see that have some injury, when I ask them what they tried, they'll all say, well, I've been taking anti-inflammatories, but it's not really fixing it, So it's not a good idea. That's the bottom line.
That is so fascinating. I think that might come as a big surprise to some of our listeners, but hopefully it also serves as some useful information. So we are going to take just a quick break to thank our sponsors, and then we will be right back for our final kick round. While we runners usually practice good, nutrient-dense diets, most of us lack the amino acids needed to break down and process the proteins we consume. This is bad news for both recovery and muscle growth, not to mention a ton of other vital life processes. That's why Body Health created Perfect Amino, the perfect blend of the 8 essential amino acids to help you build your muscles, expedite recovery, and nab that next personal record. I take Perfect Amino tablets every day and mix the Perfect Amino XP powder in my post-workout smoothies for extended protein absorption. This has helped me work harder and reach new levels in my running, something so important to the Body Health team that if you place in your age group at any public racing event, they'll put you in their winner's circle and send you a free bottle of Perfect Amino. Check it out at runnersconnect.net/winnercircle to learn more. And don't forget to use coupon code RUNNERSCONNECT on your next purchase. That's RUNNERSCONNECT in all caps. Make sure to also visit runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth, where you can enter to win a 6-pack of Perfect Amino worth $230. Again, that's runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. I wish you the best of luck. When I started using gels to fuel during my long runs and workouts, I'll be honest, I couldn't find one that I didn't hate having to take. All the gels I tried were either too sweet or too thick, making them hard to consume without chasing them down with gulps and gulps of water. They also seemed to be giving me all sorts of GI issues, which obviously made long runs and workouts a lot harder than they needed to be, but even more importantly, I felt like they were impacting my overall health. That is until I discovered Excel Gel by Pacific Health Labs. Unlike most gels, Excel Gel has a thin consistency that makes it easy to take while running, and it's also all natural, completely free of gluten and preservatives you just don't need. It's also the only gel on the market that has the proven 4-to-1 ratio of carbs to protein, as well as a mix of carbohydrates to smooth glucose uptake and extend endurance. Excel Gel helps me get the most out of my long runs and workouts, and I absolutely love it, especially the raspberry cream flavor with caffeine. Right now, Pacific Health is offering all Run to the Top listeners free samples of Excel Gel. All you have to do is send an email to info@pacifichealthlabs.com with the subject line Run to the Top. Then simply request your Excel Gel samples, as well as the address you'd like them mailed to, and then you can try them for yourself for free. Again, that's info@pacifichealthlabs.com. If you want to check out more of Pacific Health's great products, you can do so at runnersconnect.net/Pacific Health. We are back with Chris for our final kick round. And Chris, this is actually going to be pretty special because you are our final kick round. After this, we'll be doing something a little bit different, which I'll explain in just a few minutes here to our listeners. But for now, we'll go ahead and jump on into this. Chris, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I've had so many people who have helped me as, you know, mentors, and that's a tough question. But I will tell you, the thing I always think of when I hear that, you know, like what's a great piece of advice? It's actually just a quote I heard once from, which was from George Eliot. And that is that it is never too late to be what you might have been.
I love that quote. It is definitely one that is important to live by. So fantastic piece of advice there. So Chris, our next question is, what is your favorite running book or blog?
Yeah, there are lots of good ones. But I think that if I had to pick what is my favorite running book of all times, it is likely Iron War. Dave Scott, Mark Allen, and The Greatest Race Ever Run by Matt Fitzgerald.
That's great. I actually had the pleasure of interviewing him for our nutrition summit a few weeks ago. So that's great. We'll definitely link that one below. So Chris, our next question is, what would you tell a brand new runner?
That's a good question. So interestingly, I have lots of runners that call me who have an injury. And because of the stuff that they have read on the website and the fact that I've treated lots of world-class runners and so on, they will start by explaining that they're not a real runner, that they just started running and they've only been running a year or two or something like that. And, you know, it's really interesting because we often want to compare ourselves to other people. And even the very first time I went to run a marathon, I remember this moment where I was talking to this guy sitting on the floor of the airport where our flight had been delayed. And he was saying, oh, you're a runner. And I was like, and I actually didn't think I was a real runner because I hadn't yet done a marathon.
Oh, gosh.
And I explained that to him. And he was like, are you crazy, man? You've been running for like how long now? And I was like, yeah, but, you know, I've always wanted to do a marathon. I'm just now finally getting around to it. And then his wife walked up and he said, hey, this is Chris. He's a runner. And, you know, and it's really that simple. So I think it's the biggest thing is that I would tell a new runner is don't compare yourself to other people, because when you begin to run, you start running, you're going to feel awkward, uncoordinated, and extremely slow. And this will become grossly magnified if you choose to compare yourself to your friends or strangers whenever you run. All of that will change if you give it time. So I think that you have to have patience and you have to enjoy the fact that you're actually rapidly building fitness. And the truth is, is that the biggest gains you will ever make any time during your running career, at least in terms of sort of percentage of increase in fitness or percentage of speed increases, that's always at the beginning. So chart your progress and realize that you're getting stronger and fitter and faster.
Absolutely. I think comparison is so often our worst enemy. And I think it's so important that as a runner, you just focus on yourself, focus on the progression that you are making, and you will be much happier and much more fulfilled for it. So that's a great piece of advice. So Chris, our next question is, what is your favorite pre-race meal?
That's a good question. So this is going to sound like sacrilege. But before all of my races, most long training days, I actually have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and water a couple of hours before the event. So I will tell you that be careful who you share this information with, because one time before an Ironman race, one of my mentors actually asked me what I was going to eat, and I told him. And then that morning, he sent me a YouTube video, which was a cartoon character singing Peanut Butter Jelly Time.
Oh, no.
And that obnoxious song was stuck in my head literally for the entire Ironman race.
Oh,
so
no.
That was very difficult. That was a tough race.
Yeah, I think the only song I can think that might be worse than that one is probably the Small World song. That would be having that song in your head for a whole marathon. That's amazing.
Okay, that would be tough.
So that's great. I think, you know, peanut butter, and that's definitely a runner's go-to before a race. That's perfect. So our last question of the day, Chris, what is your favorite running product?
Yeah, so there are lots of things that I think of as essential running tools. You know, even though it's really just a pair of running shoes is all you really need. I think my favorite running product is a GPS watch. So I currently use a Garmin Forerunner 910 XT, which is now probably old. But, you know, being able to track my progress in real time has been one of the most helpful and motivating tools I've ever found. And I've actually given lots of Garmin GPS watches to my friends and family members who are runners, because I think it's just so helpful to be able to track your progress and know where you really are and what you're really doing. And, you know, and after many years of doing them and watching and seeing what my pace is using a GPS watch, it's incredible. Like, I can run now and I can go out and I'll start running and I'll, you know, get on a certain pace and I can know. I mean, I'll think, okay, well, I'm running 7.5 minute miles. And I look, sure enough, almost exactly, you know, or I'm running 7 minute miles or 8 minute miles or whatever. I can tell because I've been checking it for so long. And were it not for the fact that I've been using a GPS watch for many years now, I think it would be very difficult for me to pace myself adequately. And it's not that I'm staring at it the whole time. It's just that I've learned through the use of that tool how to really tell what my pace is. And I think it is incredibly helpful.
Definitely. It's amazing the technology we have today and how it allows us to kind of build that muscle memory that you're talking about, get that quantitative feedback that allows us to lock into a pace, even if, you know, maybe even if we aren't wearing a watch that day. So that's great. So Chris, thank you so much for joining us today. I've learned so much during this interview, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. So really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks. I mean, I really feel honored to be a guest on the podcast. And thank you very much for having me. It's been great.
Chris clearly knows how aggravating a setback can be for a runner. And that's why he's committed his life to helping runners get back in the saddle quicker and stronger than before. Like Chris said, while most injuries don't warrant time off, you always want to consult with your coach and a sports practitioner when determining the best path to recovery. Chris has clients all over the world through his practice, Doc on the Run, so if you're interested in his services, you can check out his site through the link below. I really hope you've enjoyed today's podcast and that it's given you some useful information to apply in your own training. So next week, we're speaking with ultramarathoner and co-founder of Qi Running, Danny Dreyer. Qi Running is based on movement principles of Tai Chi, which is a Chinese martial art and form of stylized meditative exercise. Applying this art to running, Danny works to help runners better engage their core for improved alignment and running gait. He's helped thousands of runners transform their technique to not only nab new PRs, but also prevent and recover from injury. I am so excited to have Danny on the show and learn a little bit more about this technique. So if you are too, make sure to keep an eye out for that next week. So one last thing before I sign off. As you just heard a few minutes ago, today's final kick round will be the last. I know many of our listeners have enjoyed the final kick round, but I'll admit I've been wanting to try something new, something that will allow you, the listeners, to better connect with our guests. So instead of the final kick round, each week I'm going to take questions submitted from listeners like you and feature them on the show. You can ask our guests anything you like, whether it be to explain a complex topic or maybe you have a question on something a little more personal to you. Whatever the case may be, I would love to hear what has you curious. I'll only pick 1 to 2 questions each week, so the quicker you get yours to me, the better chance you have of being on the show. We're currently creating a page where you'll be able to see the calendar of our upcoming speakers and where you can also record a voice message, much like you do for our Extra Kick podcast. In the meantime, you can send a question you would like to ask our next guest, Danny Dreyer of Chi Running, at my email, hockey@runnersconnect.net. Again, that's hockey, H-A-U-G-H-E-Y, @runnersconnect.net. All you have to do is simply title the email, run to the top, and then ask your question. If you're interested in being on next week's podcast, just make sure to email me by this Friday, May 19th at 5 p.m. Eastern. I can't wait to hear your questions, and I really hope you enjoy this new component of the podcast. So I think that will just about do it for today, but thank you again so much for joining me, and I hope you have a fantastic week. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.